I'm John Kroll. Tuesday marked the 49th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and the famous speech in response by Robert F. Kennedy that evening here in Indianapolis, urging Americans to embrace compassion and understanding in their grief. Today on No Limits, we will talk about what that moment meant and what the plans are to commemorate it as we approach the 50th anniversary. My guests are Amy DiStallo, Executive Director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative, and two people who were at Kennedy's speech, Marion County Auditor Billy Breaux and Jim Trulock, who's been a labor representative, historian, and political activist. To join the conversation, call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on social media. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the 49th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's speech to Indianapolis, an Indianapolis crowd, when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968. We're also going to be looking ahead at plans to commemorate the 50th anniversary of both the speech and the assassination here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Amy DiStallo, who is Executive Director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative, and Billy Breaux, who has worn many, many hats in her career. She was a state senator. She's now Marion County Auditor and is a former Indianapolis Public Schools teacher. And Jim Trulock, who also has worn many hats. He's been a UAW rep, a historian, and a political professional of sorts. Senator Breaux and Jim both were at Kennedy's speech 49 years ago on Tuesday, correct? And I think probably for those people, for those of a certain age, that this was one of those epical moments. And I should welcome all of you to the show. This was one of those epical moments in not just Indianapolis's history, but this country's history. And to get a sense of what the stakes were, I think probably it is best that we listen to Senator Kennedy's words first. Any complaints from the panel here? None
whatsoever. No, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we're going to listen to Senator Kennedy's remarks. What I was struck when I re-listened to this recently is how actually, in many ways, prescient and appropriate it is for the time we live in now, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you. Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand, compassion, and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own deep despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. So I ask you tonight to return home, to say a prayer for the family, Martin Luther King, yeah, it's true, but more importantly, to say a prayer for our own country, which all of us love, a prayer for understanding and that compassion of which I spoke. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. And what dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
That was the late U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy speaking on the night that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. Senator Kennedy, who was running for president at the time, spoke at a spot just a few blocks, actually, from the studio that we're broadcasting here in downtown Indianapolis. We're talking about that speech, that moment in American history, and the plans to commemorate it next year. My guests are former State Senator Billy Breaux, who's also Marion County Auditor and a former IPS teacher, and Jim Trulock, a man of many talents, and Amy DiStallo, who is Executive Director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative. Senator Breaux and Jim both were at that speech that night. Senator Breaux, I'm going to ask you to talk about what that moment was like to be there in person.
Well, let me first just say that even now, those words sent a chill through my body. And immediately, I think, propelled me back to that day, that evening when the weather was similar to what it is today, wet and dreary. Mm. I had just come from the new campaign office that Bobby Kennedy was opening in Indianapolis. And I heard on the radio that Dr. King had died. But it's like when you hear something that you really don't know whether they're telling the truth or not, and I didn't hear any more about it. So it was a shock, but it was not a shock when Bobby Kennedy said it. The thing that struck me most about that evening, though, was the sincerity and the humbleness of Bobby Kennedy. Here was a man who was in town for political reasons. But one of the first things that he said was to lower those signs. This is not the time for politics. And I guess the other thing that struck me most was the fact that here he was in the black neighborhood, one that even many blacks did not want to go into at a time like this. And yet he was able to speak to us not as poor black indigent people, but as people. How many people would have the audacity or would even think about of reciting poetry.
Aeschylus, no less.
Aeschylus, no less, to a group of this kind.
Quoting Aeschylus in that situation.
But he did it, and he did it, and we all took it in, and we all could just feel his presence and his sincerity.
Yes, indeed.
Jim, what were your memories?
Well, I went to hear a campaign speech. I was, at the time, the CAP chair, CAP being a community action program for the UAW local of my own, and was a member of the CAP Marion County Board. I went to hear him talk about politics. It was a very important speech for him to make in what was at the time the largest Democratic ward in the state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I learned subsequently that Dr. King had been murdered, and so I filled in with the crowd that about half of which I believe didn't really know. He began his speech, and like Senator Breaux, every time I hear it subsequently, I am still very much moved by it. He gave the best speech I have ever heard, and one that capsulized, I think, the world of peace that that is possible for all of us. He did it in whatever it was, 2 or 3 minutes, and I'll never forget it.
Amy, you know, what has always struck me, because this is a seminal moment in this city's history and in American history, is that for a long time afterwards, that spot really wasn't commemorated or marked in any way. I mean, could you talk a little bit about the process of actually getting it so that there is a park there and all of that?
Sure. Thanks, John. In 94, I think they initiated, and it was through the Simon family, the Pacer Foundation, that decided that they wanted to mark that spot. They wanted something to commemorate there. And so Diane Simon, who had also been there on April 4, 68, led an initiative to run an international campaign for a memorial. And fortunately, it was a local designer, Greg Perry, who won that award.
I went to high school with Greg, believe it or not, yeah.
And he said to say hi, by the way.
Yeah.
So he won the award, and we now have just a stunning, stunning memorial to mark the spot for us to be able to remember that moment in history.
And, you know, was it a... And I guess I would ask all three of you this, because it seems like was part of the fact that that was such a traumatic period in American history that for a long time, you know, we just left that area unattended or alone. Senator Breaux, I'll I'll let you have first crack at that.
I guess I was really thinking about those who helped get that movement started in terms of, and I would have to bring up two names, Larry Conrad and Bill Crawford. Hmm. Were very instrumental in saying that something needed to be at that spot to recognize what happened that evening. And as for why it took so long, I think we're a nation of people. It just seems to take us a long time to realize something important. But to our good, we did finally do so. And I'm glad to see that it's moving in the direction that it's moving now.
We are talking about Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and plans to commemorate the 50th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's speech regarding Dr. King's assassination. My guests are Amy DiStallo, Billy Breaux, and Jim Trulock. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Tuesday was the 49th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's speech to an Indianapolis crowd following the assassination of Martin Luther King. We're talking today with two people who attended the speech, a former State Senator Billy Breaux, who's now Marion County Auditor and was a former IPS teacher, and Jim Trulock, who is a longtime labor rep, and historian, and a political professional, and then Amy DiStallo, who is the executive director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative. Faith and city leaders gathered Tuesday at Dr. Martin Luther King Park, Junior Park, for an annual event commemorating Robert Kennedy's speech there, the night King was killed in 1968. As WFYI's Drew Dawdlin reports, a local group is raising funds to build more around the historic spot.
Next year marks the 50th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's impromptu speech, given on the back of a flatbed truck at what has since become Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Park. In the speech, Kennedy informed a crowd of Hoosiers that King had been assassinated and urged Americans to replace hatred with compassion and love. A monument stands near the site now, a statue showing Kennedy and King leaning towards one another with outreached arms. But the group called the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative wants to build more. This is David Dreyer, a board member of the group.
The plans are to make the actual spot, which is right over here from where we're standing, to make that a place that's educational and to finish that with structures and educational screens and other things.
Dreyer says they'll need to raise $500,000 to make the project happen, which also includes adding landscaping and lighting to the park. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Drew Dodlin.
Well, Amy DiStallo is the executive director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative. I think that's probably your cue to talk about what we have to look forward to at the park.
Thank you. We are currently, we have funded a portion of what we call Phase One, which is actually commemorating the spot that Robert Kennedy stood in 68. And there is an elliptical sidewalk and some landscaping that is done. The next step is to actually create a metal backdrop panel, which will have a portion of the speech on there for people to see. And then in the lawn around there is to create pylons that would represent individuals, so create an audience effect with people's names and who they were sprinkled throughout the lawn in front of the metal pylon, the metal panel. So that is one of the things that's underway that we are working to complete. The next step is to working with the Indiana Historical Society to actually create a graphic story on the outside of the building of the center, which is currently there, and turn it into a visitor and tourist center on the first floor, and then the outside have the graphic story of what actually happened there. For instance, a photograph of Robert Kennedy standing with the crowd is one of the things that we're looking at the design. And then in addition to that, we want to, on that south campus of King Park, enhance the landscaping, the lighting, create some signage to draw people to this place.
One of the challenges, and we were talking about this a little bit, the break, is is getting the difficulty, getting, I think, people who were not alive then to understand the difficulty of that moment. You know, it was not like today, where when something bad happens, we generally know about it. You know, I said jokingly 10 seconds afterwards via Twitter, but generally we know within a very short period of time. The news that Dr. King had been killed trickled out. There were a lot of people who were in that crowd that night who were hearing it for the first time.
I'd say at least half, probably more than half the people hadn't heard about it. I learned from it from Joe Marva Bell, who came running across from her house saying that Dr. King had been shot. Then a few minutes later came by to say that he indeed had died. And like everyone, when they first heard it, I had that combined feeling of anger and shock and indescribable sadness all at the same time, as you do when you hear about events like that. I was there simply to listen to a campaign speech. It was quite a difficult time for unions. There were three candidates for president: Eugene McCarthy, Hubert Humphrey, and Robert Kennedy. And for the UAW, and indeed for all unions, to go against their principal spokesperson in the United States Senate, Hubert Humphrey, was almost an act of defiance.
Well, and he also was here in the state, Brannigan was the governor was running as the stand-in.
And Roger Brannigan was his stand-in. So anyway, it was a very complex time, not unlike our own.
Well, and I should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi. That's the piece I want to get at, because Senator Breaux, this is long before you had become an elected official yourself and all of that. You were a young person at that point.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. Funny how time cures that, isn't it? You had to feel like, though, that in some way things were just unraveling completely.
Well, the 60s was such a time of deep unrest with the civil rights movement, and it just seemed like everything around you was crumbling. And you kept saying to yourself that there must be a different way to do things. There must be something that we can do. And so I bought into the Bobby Kennedy philosophy based on a picture and some notes that I've seen on TV with him reacting to some young people in West Virginia, just hugging them and feeling their deep distress, and saying that he went home in the evening to food, and it was his children who had everything, but yet these children had nothing. And I said, this is a man who understands and believes. So as a result of the 60s and John F. Kennedy's death and then Bobby Kennedy's death, that's a young person. I was a teacher at the time. We were the first group in the Annapolis Education Association to establish Martin Luther King Day as a holiday, because a group of us got together and said that this, something must be done. And that sort of set the background for me and my involvement in the political arena and involvement in just social justice and all.
I've gotten a question via email from a listener named Greg. And if you want to join the conversation via email, you can reach out to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Greg writes, as a younger Indy resident, I hear quite a bit about Kennedy's rightfully heralded speech. I don't often hear, though, about the black community in Indiana who heard him. What were the conditions then? Did redlining exist in Indiana like in other cities at the time of Kennedy's speech? How are things different now or the same? Senator Breaux.
That's a very deep and interesting question. And I think you answered it when you said that the times have changed in terms of how we get information. I don't think that we were as aware of what was happening in the world then as we are today. that we were more involved with day-to-day activities and that sort of thing. Was there redlining? Definitely. Was there prejudice? Yeah, definitely. Was there segregation? Yes. And at the time, it was probably about the time that we began to desegregate schools here in Indianapolis and Marion County. So there, not only was this happening on the local level, but we were also beginning to get a glimpse through the TV of what was happening with the marches and the dogs and all of this that was happening. So it was a time of deep unrest.
And just to add just a bit to that, as an example, as I say, the Third Ward, which that was in, was the largest Democratic ward in the state. It had a white ward chair and a white vice ward chair, and that was the Democratic Party.
We also need to, you know, I mean, we talk about the tensions and the demonstrations. I mean, part of at least what I recall, and I'm a little younger. I was a child at this time, and I remember watching this coverage, you know, from an elementary school student's perspective, was the sense that there just seemed to be no end to this. I mean, we, you know, when we look now back in historical memory, we think of John F. Kennedy's assassination, we think of Martin Luther King, and we think of Robert Kennedy. But reality,
yes.
There was a lot of debt. There was obviously the Vietnam War, but also here domestically, Malcolm X had been assassinated, Medgar Evers had been assassinated. On the other side, George Lincoln Rockwell had been assassinated. It did feel almost like the country was flying apart. Jim?
Well, and I think we can have our own modern interpretation that can cite the similar things today. It was a time that felt disjointed, and I think to a great extent our differences, and particularly as they culminated in our views of the Vietnam War, was a very difficult time for everyone. I wound up supporting and, in fact, working for Robert Kennedy because he was, to my mind, the one viable candidate that could ultimately bring an end to our involvement in Vietnam, which was taking so many lives and, as I still believe, turned out to be quite needlessly.
You know, we were quite fortunate, though, at that same time to have leaders who were willing to speak up and do something. And I recall Dr. Andrew J. Brown, who headed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, who took great efforts to let his church be used as a place where people could come and talk and try to come up with solutions for things that were happening in our neighborhood. And I guess that's what I think we need to continue today. And certainly we still have that going on. So while we have unrest on the one side, we also have others who are saying, you know, this is not what it should be. Let's get together and put our heads together and see what can be done to overcome it. And we tried.
We are talking about Robert Kennedy's speech to Indianapolis following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. That occurred 49 years ago on Tuesday. We're looking forward to what will be a 50th anniversary commemoration next year. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Margaret has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for this panel. And I've had the pleasure of meeting Billy Bro in person. Thank you for all that you have done and all of you. I'm 67 years old. I was class of 68 at Chatard High School on the north side by Glendale, and I'm reporting this simply as my firsthand experience that night. And yes, the weather was unbelievably like this. It just rained and rained and rained. I was at my job outside of school at Paul Harris, which was a clothing store right next to Glendale Base. When the call came in to the manager, who was white, when she got finished, she turned around and said, "Well, they got him," with a smile on her face, smile on her face. They got him. And I'm not going to say what else she said because it was so ugly. It wasn't a lot more, but it was very ugly. And my mom picked me up. Mom and we lived in Meridian Kessler, the southern part. And Meridian Kessler originally was modeled after Butler Tarkington. So I was growing up in the midst of people of goodwill who, both white and black, housing-wise, and then School 86 was the only IPS school that was voluntarily integrated and therefore left out of the busing order. Now, going on the next day at Chittard High School, which was easily 98, maybe even 90% white, 99% white, the teachers let us and led or just oversaw conversations. I'm not sure any real classes took place that day. And the overwhelming sense was wherever he goes, there's violence. Why are we supposed to think he is a person of peace? And at that point, the Catholic Church, certainly locally, was not doing anything to advance civil rights. There were many Catholics as well as Methodists and Baptists and all that working in some congregations, but not the archdiocese. So we certainly hadn't gotten anything in school at Chittard by Glendale. I happened to grow up and thought it was normal that we would be all working. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you're a kid, and I thought that was normal to because that's the middle. And then when you find out how ugly. Okay, so the discussion became very, very heated. I got sent to the principal's office, and I thought, here's a person of authority. She'll at least be sympathetic, as I sat there sobbing, just stunned again by the vitriolic nature of most of my classmates. Most, not all, but by far most. And she looked at me with no expression on her face, and she said, "Well, Margaret, most of us just don't feel the way you do." And I felt like I was hit in the stomach. Anyway, I'm trying not to cry. I do believe there's been much, much, much progress since then. At the same time, when I came back to Indianapolis with our then 8-year-old daughter, I did witness firsthand within 3 weeks signs of just the meanness of many people who happen to be white toward people of color. And again, I do think there's been much more progress. But that night, with Senator Kennedy's assassination, it was just a dreadful, dreadful loss. And so thank you for all that you all there on the panel have done, and the wonderful leadership and role modeling and helping people figure out how to listen and talk with and hope for and work toward, at the very least, a live and let live. And I've forgotten how inspirational Senator Kennedy's speech was that night. And we don't have that in this day and age. Our kids are growing up. My 28-year-old daughter, while she...
Margaret, I apologize. We're coming up on a break, but I want to thank you very much for sharing your story.
Thank you very much.
I know
Thanks,
these are painful
Margaret.
Memories.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We are talking about the anniversary of Robert Kennedy's speech to an Indianapolis crowd on the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That was 49 years ago on Tuesday. We're marking the occasion by talking with Amy DiStallo, Executive Director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative, and former Senator Billy Breaux and Jim Trulock, both of whom were at the speech that night. I'm John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with Amy DiStallo, who's executive director of the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative, former state senator Billy Breaux, who is now Marion County auditor, and a former IPS teacher, and Jim Trulock, who's worn many hats. He's been a union rep, an historian, and a political professional. About the 49th anniversary on Tuesday of Robert F. Kennedy's speech here in Indianapolis, marking the assassination of Martin Luther King, which had occurred earlier in that day in Memphis, Tennessee. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Michael has done and find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Michael says, it also seems that even at that late date, the major black radio station, WTLC-FM, annually still would play a clip from that RFK speech in a regular rotation around the April 4th date. Ask your guests about TLC regularly playing that RFK clip and if that old plaque is still there. Do we know anything about this?
About a plaque?
Yeah. Old plaque. I'm not sure what's being referred to there.
I'm not sure about a plaque, but I do commend WTLC for the work that they've done through the years, especially Amos Brown, who kept things at our ear tips all the time. And they did do our FK speech many times.
I'm not a Quaker, but at the First Friends Church, I went to a meeting recently where we all decided to wear safety pins on our jackets, meaning we were safe to talk to. And what needs to be done, I think, as much as anything else, is the general commitment to talking to each other. Justice is always a work in progress, and always will be. It was then, and we have made some progress. We still have a ways to go, of course, and we need to, in order to achieve that, begin talking to each other about our differences and respecting them.
Amy, that sets you up, because we've talked about the tangible plans and goals for the Kennedy King Memorial Initiative. What are the less tangible ones? What kind of impact do you want this to have?
I'm glad to have the opportunity to add to Jim's remarks, because one of our real initiatives is to create those safe places for conversation, for discussion, and to be able to get concepts and ideas that are dividing our country out there for us to be able to talk about, and to better understand and come to some resolution of what is fact, what is fiction, help us to really decide what is going on and what is causing division in our country, and how can we as a people come together and begin to come up with some solutions and some options for resolution.
We are talking about the legacy of that night, April 4th, in which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated and Robert F. Kennedy spoke to Indianapolis, ultimately the nation and the world, from here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Krall. I'm a frequent caller, and again, you've had a very interesting show. Quickly, I just want to say that while I understand and hear the messages being promoted here, the realities on the ground are that we have not really changed as much as we'd like to believe. The vitriol of this political discourse right now kind of speaks to it, how little we actually have changed, even though we have made aesthetic changes that have helped a lot. Bobby's speech, or Mr. Kennedy's speech, was so highly influential, and it's amazing to me how few people actually know about that speech or know what its results were here in Indianapolis, that our city did not go up in flames. Many people have, you know, heard something here or there tangentially. But I think maybe that speech should be replayed often because of what he spoke about and the fact, and the facts that we're actually looking at right now. Just your thoughts on how I'll go ahead and take this.
Certainly, but we'll get
you guys' thoughts on how far have we actually come in reality.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, David. Senator Breaux is the elected office holder. I think we should let you speak first.
David, needless to say, I think you speak a lot of truth. We have probably not advanced as far as we should have. But I think one of the things that has come true through the election this last year that for many years there was covertness and overt. I think that many people have kept things under their skins and talked to their neighbors but haven't not really been outspoken about how they truly felt. And with this election occurring, many of these ideas and things have come to the forefront, and we realize that we have not advanced as far as we possibly could in terms of just race relations, that there is still in this country the economical divide. And the economical divide becomes because that if I have something, I don't want you to take it from me. And we've too often looked at those people are taking something that belongs to me rather than what those people are adding to the society at the time.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Richard, or actually more of a comment. And again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can reach us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Richard writes, "A Ripple of Hope is a great documentary about the speech by Robert Kennedy and directed by Donald Boggs, a Heartland Film Award winner. Kennedy was told by the city of Indianapolis not to make the speech, but he wanted to speak to the black community." I want to have us talk a little bit about, because that does seem to be something that has been lost, that really in this country, we no longer try to speak across divides. We no longer try to reach people who don't have the same set of experiences that we do. Jim, you want to say something? I can see you leaning in.
Well, it's my understanding that police protection was withdrawn from Kennedy, and he was told that that was the case if he went to that meeting at across the street from the Broadway Christian Center there on Broadway. In that regard, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought a bit.
Yeah.
But in that regard, he went anyway. And Don Boggs' documentary addresses that issue, Ripple of Hope. And one of the things in it, and I forget who said, I think it was Mankiewicz, said that the best speech he ever wrote in his life, he wrote on the way over there, and Kennedy threw it away and talked out of his heart instead and gave, indeed, the best speech I will ever hope to hear.
Well, and I guess where I was going with this is Robert Kennedy had to undergo an education of sorts when it came to the issue of civil rights. I mean, there was a famous meeting he had with civil rights activists when they berated him, really, for his insensitivity to many of their concerns and the plight of many African Americans in this country. And yet, by this point, he'd become one of the few white politicians in the country who could speak with any kind of authority or credibility with African Americans. Senator Breaux.
You know, in past years and during the movement, there were organizations that spoke to, like, Dialogue Today, that would get Jewish women and Christians, and we would all have a discussion. I think what has happened is that we all thought that this thing had been resolved, that we were on our way, that things would never be the same like they used to be. So my hope is, as we look to the future and look to getting people involved, the Kennedy King Memorial sits right next to an elementary school. I hope that we're able to get those young people involved in the Kennedy movement and what that area meant, and that we'll begin to, because I'm a firm believer that if we get to their children, that they will lead us in the right direction. So we've got to make sure that they get the information and that they can do something with it.
We are talking about the 49th, soon to be the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination and Robert Kennedy's famous speech regarding the assassination that took place here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Tim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tim, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. Having just heard a few minutes ago the former Chatard student talking about the attitude after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, I wanted to give a different perspective from another Catholic institution. I attended Brebeuf, and the Jesuits had a completely different take on what happened right after Martin Luther King's death. We had a minority population that was certainly more than the 2% they had at Chatard, might have not been as much as 8 or 10%, but close to that. But it didn't matter. Morally, the more progressive Jesuit thought process was that civil rights was something that was going to be, you know, pursued, and they backed it. And that's when I got involved in that particular movement, spiritually and somewhat involved in other efforts. I did later do the jazz show all night on WTLC when you just mentioned them a little bit ago. But in any case, I just wanted to say that we had a completely different take, and it was as bad as it had been after John F. Kennedy's assassination when that happened. So I just wanted to weigh in with that a little different perspective.
Thank you very much for the call and for sharing your memories, Tim.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the things that that I think we tend to forget is that there is no single American experience. If there are 330 million Americans, there are 330 million American experiences. So speaking in monolith is dangerous. There were, though, at this time, some pockets of hope in the city. Senator Breaux, I see you nodding your head.
Well, as I said, there were groups that were working to try to do what they could to make sure that the message got out and the justice was equal for everyone. I remember the Southern Christian Leadership Conference had workshops. They worked with the Black Panthers at the time and others. Because when you talk about monolith, we oftentimes think that African-Americans all speak in one voice, which is not true at all. We have many people who diverse views and attitudes, and just bringing us together to make us understand one another sometimes is very meaningful. So Southern Christian Leadership Conference, we had the NAACP that worked very, very hard. We had the Urban League that was working very, very hard. And all these groups are still working hard. I'm not sure they have the same impact that they had in the 60s, because I think, to some extent, our societies, our people have gotten more advanced economically, and they don't rely on organizations and whatnot as much as we once did.
The reason I was chuckling is your response made me recall an incident with someone you probably remember, my late colleague at the Indianapolis Star and News, Lynn Ford. Our desks were beside each other for a while, and we had this. Our friendship was based on the fact that we were both major Elvis fans. Lynn was a huge Elvis fan. And I remember another colleague of ours walked up to Lynn when he found out about this and said to Lynn, "I kid you not, do black people like Elvis?" At which point, Lynn had the absolute best response I've ever heard in my life. He just looked back at him and said, "Well, I do, but you're going to have to go ask the rest of them." So that, I'm sorry, I was not laughing.
When I first heard Elvis, I thought he was black.
So One of the things, though, that does, you know, I think add the poignance to this speech that we couldn't have known at the time, Amy, was that, 63 days later?
June 6th of 68.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy was going to be assassinated himself. How much of that adds to the emotional resonance of this moment in this speech?
I think that it when you put that together with the fact that he was only alive another 60 days after he said those memorable words, it really does add impact. I'm not sure that everybody does know, makes that connection, but I think it's important to remember that.
And what was the impact after seeing that speech when, you know, presumably you were not both out in California, that in Los Angeles, when you heard that Kennedy had been shot too, Jim?
I at a certain point, I became kind of the union guy in the Kennedy campaign, and I asked my boss, Walter Sheridan, who was on leave from CBS, to if I could go to California. He said, we've already got a guy out there. That guy was, so we don't need you, Jim, sorry to say. That guy was Paul Schrade. Paul Schrade was wounded when Robert Kennedy was killed. He was in the room there, and I think, you know, and that could have been me had Walter sent me out there. So it was poignant in a number of ways to me. I had lost my political spokesman, and I had lost my fellow UAW brother. Or I didn't lose him. He recovered from his wounds, but he'd been wounded too.
Senator Breaux, that must have hit with particular impact for African Americans, but you felt like your spokespeople and your friends were being slaughtered.
It just seemed as if that the world was coming to an end, to tell you the truth. You did not know where to go or what to do. And I can recall during the early 60s, I was Unitarian because I loved to go and my daughter loved the Sunday school. But then I realized I needed more substance to what was happening in this world. And that's when I got involved in St. John Baptist Church, because it just said the times were such that you had to reach out and reach for some guidance and some direction. What are we coming to in this world? And to that end, I think we're there again. I think we're asking ourselves that same question. Where do we go?
That's an appropriate last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Amy DiStallo, Billy Breaux, and Jim Trulock, for what's been a provocative conversation. Hope you'll all come back next year for the 50th anniversary.
To deal.
Love to.
I am
Love
John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.